Astronomers Penzias and Wilson in 1964 discovered this uniform cosmic microwave background, and for this they won the Nobel Prize. So it was an incredible discovery that they made. Except this story is not actually true. I'm so excited to talk about this topic. Unfortunately, my co-author Niyash Afshoordi can't be with us today. He's washing his hair. So the honor to tell you about the Battle of the Big Bang falls on me. And I'd like to start off by reading an ancient creation story. It's the Nasaduya Sukta, the hymn of creation from the Rig Veda, which some people think dates back to 1500 BC. There was neither non-existence nor existence then, neither the realm of space nor the sky which is beyond. Who really knows? Who will here proclaim it? Whence was it produced? Whence is this creation? Gods came afterwards with the creation of the universe. Who then knows whence it has arisen? And what I love about this story is its embracing of uncertainty. And that is a theme that I'm going to highlight today. The uncertainty that we have over the Big Bang. In fact, we might even ask the question, is the Big Bang a creation myth? And the answer that I'm going to argue for is a clear yes and no. Okay, so it's a bit of a Schrodinger's cat answer, I know, but it's going to be a lot clearer, a lot easier to clear this paradox up. How we're going to do that is the subject of today's talk and also our book, The Battle of the Big Bang. Now, battles are nothing new in science and even in cosmology. Even at the birth of cosmology, Albert Einstein fought with Georges Lemaître over whether the universe might expand. And he said famously, "Vos calculus sont corrects. Mais votre physique est abominable," which in English translates as "your calculations are correct, but your physics is abominable." Although Google Translate says it's "your calculations are correct, but your physique is abominable." So I'm not quite sure which was the accurate one. I'm probably going to go with the first one. Now, Einstein initially rejected the expanding universe, but his theory of relativity predicted it. It thinks of gravity as the curvature of space-time. I'm sure many of you will be familiar with this sort of picture. Space-time is this dynamical object, and so it can expand and contract. And in the 1920s, Edwin Hubble, using techniques developed by Henrietta Swan Leavitt, actually measures the distance to galaxies. And what is found is that the farther a galaxy, the faster it is moving away from us. The cosmos is expanding. But there are different ways to interpret this expanding universe. And that's our first battle, the battle of the expanding universe, because there are at least two ways that we could interpret this. So on the top here, we have what's called the steady state cosmology. So what happens here is that as the universe expands, new matter is created to fill in the gaps. So what you can see is that the density of galaxies does not change over time. So a constant density. Whereas in a Big Bang cosmology, the density of the universe, as we go forwards in time, declines. And this Big Bang battle was quite fierce. On the left, you had the proponents of the steady state, Bondi, Gold, and Hoyle. On the right, we have some of the proponents of the Big Bang, Georges Lemaître, Georges Gamow, and Martin Ryle. And Martin Ryle, what he did was he showed that the distribution of radio galaxies, that's just galaxies that we can detect with radio waves, was getting denser in the past. And that backed the Big Bang. But this led to a heated exchange because it turned out Ryle's statistics were pretty poor, at least initially. So there was a lot of noise in his data and he overinterpreted and made loads of mistakes. So Woodrow T. Sullivan III, what a wonderful name. He's a historian of radio astronomy. And he said Ryle and Hoyle would go after each other like a mongoose and a cobra. I don't know which one you think is the mongoose and which one is the cobra. But this debate was finally settled with the discovery of the cosmic microwave background, the afterglow of the Big Bang, because a hotter, denser universe would emit light, just like the sun. Just think of the sun. It emits light. But because the universe expands, this light would be stretched into longer and longer wavelengths. So we should see it in the microwave part of the spectrum. And these two astronomers, Penzias and Wilson, in 1964, discovered this uniform cosmic microwave background has a temperature of just 2.7 Kelvin. That's minus 270 degrees. If anyone was here last night, it felt a bit like that when the wind was blowing. And for this, they won the Nobel Prize. So it was an incredible discovery that they made. Except this story is not actually true, because the cosmic microwave background was in fact discovered by a Canadian 24 years earlier. And if you don't believe me, there is his paper from 1940 where he measures the temperature of interstellar space, and you can see the temperature there is 2.7 Kelvin. So actually, tough luck, America. The Canadians got there first. Go, Canada, because my co-author is Canadian. Maybe we should call it, he likes to call it, the Canadian microwave background. So this Canadian microwave cosmic microwave background is almost perfectly uniform. But if we increase the contrast, we start to see tiny variations in temperature. The contrast has to go up to about one part in 100,000 to see this. But these fluctuations are the smoking gun of the Big Bang, because they need to be there actually for galaxies to form. No fluctuations, no galaxies. So if you look at the top here, these little blue and green dots, these are the cosmic microwave background. The red band in the middle is emission of microwaves from the Milky Way. But what came before the Big Bang? Isn't that the question we all want to ask, right? And often we're told, well, this is the Big Bang was the beginning of time. So asking what came before the Big Bang is meaningless. There can't be a before time. Well, now, this is due to singularity theorems. These are theorems proven by Roger Penrose and Stephen Hawking. And Roger Penrose was here yesterday. And these do prove that there is a point where clocks stop ticking, where the space-time curvature, the density, the pressure go to infinity, a singularity. So these Penrose-Hawking theorems, as they're called, they prove that the Big Bang was the beginning. If gravity is always attractive, the universe has three space dimensions and one time dimension that we can measure with rulers and clocks, time travel into the past is impossible, and perhaps most important of all, Einstein's theory of general relativity describes the evolution of the universe at all scales. Now, here's the dirty secret. Most cosmologists do not believe these assumptions. At least, I would say at least one, if not several, of these assumptions are doubted, including Penrose and Hawking themselves. So that means we can think of, if you like, two Big Bangs. So the one on the right and the one on the left look very, very similar, but it's this singularity that is not present on the left. So some cosmologists, in fact, in our book, we talk about the hot Big Bang and the Big Bang singularity. The hot Big Bang is a theory that just says the universe expanded from a very hot, dense state, just leaving open the question whether it was a beginning of time or not. The one on the right says, no, it was a beginning of time from a singularity. Now, we surveyed scientists at a large physics conference in Copenhagen. We asked some various questions in fundamental physics, all these debates physicists have about what's dark matter, what's dark energy. And the only question that we got a consensus on was that the Big Bang should not be understood as a beginning of time, only an evolution from a hot, dense state. And in fact, yesterday I got an email from the American Physical Society because they recreated this survey with about 1,700 replies, and we got the exact same number, 68%. So that is the broad view of physicists. The Big Bang is not the beginning, or at least not necessarily the beginning. So what came before the Big Bang is not a meaningless question. And that's the question I've been spending a lot of time interviewing all the world's leading cosmologists about what they think might have been before. So there I am with Stephen Hawking, with Roger Penrose, and my co-author, Nihai Ashef-Shawdy, who's developed, some of these have developed alternatives to some of the standard paradigms. And one of the key standard paradigms is called inflationary cosmology. And that leads us to our next battle, the battle of inflation. Because it turns out there's actually several problems for the Big Bang Theory. They go by these names. I'm not going to have time to explain them all, but I'll just pick one of them as an example. So this is the horizon problem. So imagine you've got a pizza. Anyone have any pizza here today? It's not bad, I think. Yeah, it was good, wasn't it? Okay, so when the pizza comes out the oven, it cools to the temperature of the room or the outside air, wherever you are. And we enjoy its warmth because that takes time. It can't happen instantly. That is not allowed by the laws of physics. Now, this CMB, the cosmic microwave background, the oldest light that we can see from the Big Bang, it has almost the same temperature everywhere. But here's something very strange. In 14 billion years, there hasn't been enough time for the CMB to come to equal temperature. So how did it get to be so uniform? This is a very, very big puzzle. And one solution that's been proposed is called inflation. So here the idea is that the universe expands exponentially and it doubles in size every 10 to the minus 37 seconds. So that is, if you don't know your scientific notation, let me think, 10 trillionth of a trillionth of a trillionth of a second. So a rather fast expansion rate. And believe it or not, this is perfectly allowed by the laws of physics. And less than 100 of these doublings will actually solve all four of our Big Bang problems. So let's go back to the problem that we looked at, the horizon problem. So in an inflationary universe, the cosmos would be vastly smaller 14 billion years ago than in the standard cosmology because in inflation it undergoes this exponential expansion. So that means particles can come to equal temperature because they're traveling at a much shorter distance. Horizon problem solved. And cosmologists and physicists are very, very impressed with inflation. Here you can see the authors of inflation getting the prestigious Dirac Prize. There's Alan Guth, he's the originator of inflation, and his colleagues Paul Steinhardt in the middle and Andre Linder, they'd help develop the theory afterwards. And you can see European Space Agency, there's their timeline of the universe. And you can see that they have cosmic inflation there just after the Big Bang. And notice that almost all of the expansion of the universe happens in the inflationary era. And that would have been a tiny fraction of a second. So we have Big Bang and then inflation. But I'm going to argue that this is wrong. And in fact, this is what all the cosmologists say. Would you tell me that it's wrong? So the thing is, inflation, if it happened, is a pre-Big Bang model. Now, why do I say that? Well, recall that cosmologists now define the Big Bang as the hot Big Bang. Now, inflation, actually, when it expands so rapidly, it actually cools the universe down to as cold as it can possibly be. And when inflation ends, its energy has to go somewhere. So where does it go? It's converted into matter and radiation. And that is what we think of as the Big Bang. Don't take my word for it. This is what Alan Guth, the inventor of inflation, said. It's a prequel to the conventional Big Bang picture. And this leads to an even more shocking result. So it's not shocking enough that we actually have a pre-Big Bang scenario that is standard cosmology. But this inflationary scenario leads to something we call eternal inflation. So inflation doesn't end everywhere at once. Remember that we have this inflationary era and then we have to transition to a standard expansion. But it doesn't happen everywhere at once. Like a radioactive decay, it happens with a half-life. But the part that hasn't decayed yet, well, that keeps on inflating. And it will make more Big Bangs. And this will repeat endlessly. So inflation seems to make a multiverse. And there's a great irony here, because in some sense, this brings us back to the steady state. Remember that picture I had, the density doesn't change over time? Well, at the larger scales, eternal inflation is also static. If you replace those galaxies, remember those little dots we saw in that picture? Well, replace those galaxies with what we're calling pocket universes. and you have a steady state. Again, I want to quote Alan Guth here, eternal inflation will strongly resemble the old steady state model of the universe. So you'll hear all the time the steady state is dead, and in some sense it is. The version of it that Hoyle, Bondi and Gould proposed was ruled out by the cosmic microwave background, but in some sense it's come back. Now, one difference though is that the steady state was thought to be eternal into the past. Now, what about eternal inflation? Well, inflation implies that gravity is repulsive. When you have this exponential expansion, you have repulsive gravity. And that violates one of the other assumptions of the singularity theorem of Penrose and Hawking. But can inflation really be eternal into the past? There is a theorem proven by Borda, Guth and Vilenkin that says no. Actually, inflation is only future eternal, but it had to have a beginning. However, there was another more recent paper, less known, but Lesniewski, Essen and Davis said actually they think inflation can be eternal into the past. And there was another review of this by, I guess, Najani, Ling and Quintin, and they were like, oh, maybe, we're not really sure. And in fact, the lead author on that paper is my co-author's wife, Ghazal Ghesnajani. So inflation may or may not need its own prequel, but it is a prequel to the Big Bang. But not everyone likes prequels. And in fact, there's been something of a rebellion against inflation led by none other than Paul Steinhardt. You may remember him as one of the fathers of inflationary theory. Well, he's turned against it in a similar way that Einstein sort of turned against quantum mechanics. And they've been attacking inflation in the scientific literature, also in the popular literature. This was an article in Scientific American that got the defenders of inflation very angry. They wrote a letter signed by Stephen Hawking and all luminary physicists saying, why are you publishing this? So I interviewed the critics and the defenders, and the key criticism, well, one criticism, is that there are too many inflationary models. In fact, there are so many, I couldn't even fit them on the page. So what do we mean by this? There are different ways that inflation can happen or that it can transition from the inflating universe to the standard Big Bang model. And that leads us to question a claim made by some cosmologists that inflation actually fits the data. You don't need to worry what's on this graph. The bottom line is that the claim is it fits the data. And the critics will say, but which of these models fits the data, right? If it didn't, you'd find another one that did. But I think the main criticism is this idea of the multiverse. Some physicists love this and some hate it. In fact, one article in Nature complained about it threatening the integrity of science. And in fact, the co-author of that paper was Joe Silk, and I was on a panel with him yesterday. So I don't know if they'll post the video for that. R.B. Loeb, another critic, when I asked him about the multiverse, he compared it to taking recreational drugs. You will feel good. I'm sure Alan Guth feels really good about the idea of the multiverse. But doing physics is not about feeling good. Now, a little bit of an inside story about R.V. Loeb. He's no stranger to controversy, as he suggested that interstellar comets are actually alien spacecraft. So I'm not quite sure who is taking the drugs here. But there is this issue of, you know, is it embracing the multiverse, abandoning empirical science? Put that to Alan Guth, and he said, well, to assert that I claim that science needs to abandon the concept of empirical testability, in my view, is a blatant lie. So this is not exactly a friendly fight. Things have got quite heated. And I tried to get a debate organized with these guys. It didn't quite work out. But I did get Alan to debate with Sir Roger Penrose, who won the Nobel Prize in Physics. He's got an alternative. And you can watch that on my YouTube channel if you're interested. It was very, very interesting. But of course, we don't think scientific issues are settled on YouTube debates. What we'd like to find, or at least what inflationary cosmologists would like to find, is the smoking gun of inflation. So inflation is thought to produce ripples in the fabric of space-time. So think of a rock being thrown into the water. That's what might happen. The whole fabric of space-time might ripple. These are known as gravitational waves. And these could actually, if they were emitted by the Big Bang, these would imprint on the cosmic microwave background, creating this swirling pattern called BMOs. Now, detecting them is thought to be the smoking gun of inflation, as many inflation alternatives do not make these B modes. And in 2014, the discovery of B modes was announced. It was in all the press, lots of big headlines, talk of a Nobel Prize for Alan Guth and Andre Linde. I asked Paul Steinhardt if he'd accept a Nobel Prize, and he said no. But the Nobel Prize Committee didn't have to worry about that because this discovery turned to dust. So in outer space, there is a lot of dust. This is a picture I took from my back garden in central London, believe it or not. And you can see here these dark patches. These are dust lanes. And what was actually discovered was simply dust. It had contaminated the signal and they'd made mistakes in their statistics. And the other physicists gave them a very, very hard time for making a huge press announcement. And that has maybe given more sympathy to cosmologists who are proposing alternatives to inflation. So what are these alternatives? Well, one idea is a cyclic universe. So this is said can mimic inflation. And some of these versions, the universe expands and contracts. But Roger Penrose has a model that actually never contracts. So in this scheme, what happens is it's always expanding, but the universe at the Big Bang and in the far future can't build rulers or clocks because the conditions are too extreme. And remember, one of the conditions of the singularity theorem is that we could measure three dimensions of space and one of time with rulers and clocks, but there wouldn't be any rulers and clocks. So the universe would lose its sense of scale and transform from one eon to another. Another alternative is that the universe might have been born from a black hole. And some of these black hole models actually include inflation.
To continue watching this video, click the link in the top left or in the description below.
With a free trial, you can enjoy the full talk and thousands more.
Thank you for being part of the conversation.